Hi, this is Mrs. English, and today I'm reading to you from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Odyssey. I will be reading from Book 6. Remember the last thing we heard in Book 5, Odysseus found a place up the river a little bit at the land of the Phaeacians, and he made himself a bed of leaves, and just like you would save a little ember of a fire by burying it deep to save it for the next day, he has buried himself in these leaves. And that's how Book 5 ended. Book 6. So long-suffering great Odysseus slept in that place in an exhaustion of sleep and weariness. And now Athena went her way to the district and city of the Phaeacian men, who formerly lived in the spacious land Hyperia, next to the Cyclops, who were men too overbearing, and who had kept harrying them, being greater in strength. From here, godlike Nausithous had removed and led a migration, and settled in Scyria, far away from men who eat bread, and driven a wall about the city and built their houses. Line 10, and made the temples of the gods and allotted the holdings. But now he had submitted to his fate and gone to Hades, and Alcinous, learned in designs from the gods, now ruled there. It was to his house that the gray-eyed goddess Athena went, devising the homecoming of great-hearted Odysseus, and she went into the ornate chamber in which a girl was sleeping. Like the immortal goddesses for stature and beauty, Nausicaa, the daughter of great-hearted Alcinous, and beside her two handmaidens with beauty given from the graces, slept on either side of the post with the shining doors closed. She drifted in, line 20, like a breath of wind to where the girl slept, and came and stood above the head and spoke a word to her, likening herself to the daughter of Demas, famed for seafaring, a girl of the same age in whom her fancy delighted. So Athena likens herself to one of Nausicaa's friends. In this likeness, the gray-eyed Athena spoke to her. Line 25. Nausicaa, how could your mother have a child so careless? The shining clothes are lying away uncared for, while your marriage is not far off when you should be in your glory for clothes to wear, and provide too for those who attend you. So Athena wakes her up in the likeness of her friend and says, oh my goodness, what are you doing sleeping? How can you be so careless? Look at that. You haven't even done the laundry. And you're almost old enough to get married. You should be fixing clothes, preparing them, etc., etc. It is from such things that a good reputation among people springs up, giving pleasure to your father and the lady your mother. So let us go on a washing tomorrow when dawn shows. I, too, will go along with you and help you, so you can have all done most quickly, since he will not stay long unmarried. For already you are being courted by all the best men of the Phaeacians hereabout, and you, too, are a Phaeacian. So come, urge your famous father early in the morning to harness the mules and wagon for you, and it shall carry the sashes and dresses and shining coverlets for you. In this way it will be so much more becoming than for you to go there on foot, line 40, for the washing places are a long way from the city. Okay, but take it all, and you better take a wagon instead of just carrying a basket, because you'll just look better, and it is such a long ways off. And, as a side note, of course, maybe you find somebody there who might want to ride in a wagon. Line 41. So the gray-eyed Athena spoke and went away from her to Olympus, where the abode of the gods stands firm and unmoving forever, they say, and is not shaken with winds, nor spattered with rains, nor does snow ever pile there. But the shining bright air stretches cloudless away, and the white light glances upon it. And there, and all their days, the blessed gods take their pleasure. There the gray-eyed one went. And when she had talked with the young girl, and the next the dawn came, throned in splendor, and wakened the well-robed girl Nausicaa, and she wondered much at her dreaming, line 50, and went through the house so as to give the word to her parents, to her dear father and her mother. She found them within there. The queen was sitting by the fireside with her attendant women, turning sea-purple yarn on a distaff, and of course purple takes lots and lots of little seashell life to produce that type of a dye, so to even talk about purple anything means we are talking about royalty. Her father she met as he was going out the door to the council of famed barons, where the proud Phaeacians used to summon him. She stood very close up to her dear father and spoke to him, Daddy dear, will you not have them harness me the wagon, the high one with the good wheels, so that I can take the clothing to the river and wash it? And now it's lying about all dirty, and you yourself, when you sit among the first men in council and share their counsels, ought to have clean clothing about you. And also you have 5 dear sons who are grown in the palace, 2 of them married, and the other 3 are sprightly bachelors, and they are forever wanting clean, fresh clothing to wear it when they go to dance. It is my duty to think about all this. So she spoke, line 66, but she was ashamed to speak of her joyful marriage to her dear father, but he understood all and answered, I do not begrudge you the mules, child, nor anything else, so go, and the serving men will harness the wagon, the high one with the good wheels that has the carrying basket. He spoke, and gave the order to the serving men. These obeyed, and brought the mule wagon with good wheels outside, and put it together, and led the mules under the yoke and harnessed them, and the girl brought the bright clothing out from the inner chamber, and laid it in the well-polished wagon. Meanwhile her mother put in a box all manner of food, which would preserve strength, and put many good things to eat with it, and poured out wine in a goat-skin bottle, and her daughter put that in the wagon. She gave her limpet olive oil and a golden oil flask for her and her attendant women to use for anointing. Nausicaa took up the whip and the shining reins, then whipped them into a start, and the mules went noisily forward and pulled without stint, carrying the girl and the clothing. She was not alone. The rest, her handmaidens, walked on beside her. Line 85. Now when they had come to the delightful stream of the river, where there was always a washing place and plenty of glorious water that ran through to wash out whatever was so dirty, there they unyoked the mules, and set them free from the wagon, and chased them out along the bank of the swirling river to graze on the sweet river grass, while they from the wagon lifted the wash in their hands and carried it to the black water and stamped on it in the basins, making a race and game of it until they had washed and rinsed all dirt away, then spread it out in line along the beach of the sea, where the water of the sea had washed the most big pebbles up on the dry shore. Then they themselves, after bathing and anointing themselves with olive oil, ate their dinner all along by the banks of the river, and waited for the laundry to dry out in the sunshine. But when she and her maids had taken their pleasure in eating, line 100, they threw off their veils for a game of ball. And among them it was Nausicaa of the white arms who led in the dancing. And as Artemis, who showers arrows, moves on the mountains, either along Tigitus or on high towering Eurymanthus, delighting in boars and deer in their running, and along with her the nymphs, daughters of Zeus of the Aegis, range in the wilds and play, and the heart of Leto is gladdened, for the head and the brows of Artemis are above all others, and she is easily marked among them, though all are lovely. So this one shone among her handmaidens, a virgin unwedded. Line 110. But now, when she was about ready once more to harness the mules and fold the splendid clothing and start on the way home, then the gray-eyed goddess Athena thought what to do next, how Odysseus should awake and see the well-favored young girl, and she should be his guide to the city of the Phaeacians. Line 115. Now the princess threw the ball toward one handmaiden and missed the girl, and the ball went into the swirling water, and they all cried out aloud, "Oh!" And noble Odysseus wakened and sat up and began pondering in his heart and spirit, "Ah me! What are the people whose land I have come to this time? And are they violent and savage, and without justice or hospitable to strangers, with a godly mind? Do they practice Xenia? See now how an outcry of young women echoes about me, of nymphs who keep the sudden and sheer high mountain places and springs of the rivers and grass of the meadows. Or am I truly in the neighborhood of human people I can converse with? But come now, I myself shall see what I can discover." So speaking, great Odysseus came from under his thicket, and from the dense foliage with his heavy hand he broke off a leafy branch to cover his body and hide the male parts. Remember, he's naked. And line 130, and went in the confidence of his strength, like some hill-kept lion, who advances, though he is rained on and blown by the wind, and both eyes kindle. He goes out after cattle or sheep, or it may be deer in the wilderness, and his belly is urgent upon him to get inside of a close steading and go for the sheep flocks. So Odysseus, line 135, was ready to face young girls with well-ordered hair, naked though he was, for the need was on him, and yet he appeared terrifying to them, all crusted with dry spray, and they scattered one way and another down the jutting beaches. Only the daughter of Alcinous stood fast, for Athena put courage into her heart, and took the fear from her body, and she stood her ground and faced him. And now Odysseus debated whether to supplicate the well-favored girl by clasping her knees, or stand off where he was, and in words of blandishment, ask if she would show him the city and lend him clothing. Then, in the division of his heart, this way seemed best to him, to stand well off, and supplicate in words of blandishment, for fear that, if he clasped her knees, the girl might be angry. He is naked. So, blandishingly and full of craft, he began to address her. I'm at your knees, O queen, but are you mortal or goddess? Line 150. If indeed you are one of the gods who hold wide heaven, then I must find in you the nearest likeness to Artemis, the daughter of great Zeus, for beauty, figure, and stature. Notice he did not say, you look like Aphrodite, the lovely, you look like Artemis. But if you are one among those mortals who live in this country, three times blessed are your father and the lady your mother, and three times blessed your brothers too, and I know their spirits are warmed forever with happiness at the thought of you, seeing such a slip of beauty taking her place at the chorus of dancers. But blessed at the heart, even beyond these others, is that one who, after loading you down with gifts, leads you as his bride home. Okay, so first he says, are you a mortal or a goddess? And he could tell she's of marriageable age. Line 160. I've never with these eyes seen anything like you, neither man nor woman. Wonder takes me as I look on you. Yet in Delos once I saw such a thing by Apollo's altar. I saw the stalk of a young palm shooting up. I had gone there once, and with a following of a great many people. And on that journey, which was to mean hard suffering for me, and as, when I looked upon that tree, my heart admired it long, since such a tree had never yet sprung from the earth, so now, lady, I admire you in wonder, and am terribly afraid to clasp you by the knees. The hard sorrow is on me. Line 170. Yesterday, on the 20th day, I escaped the wine-blue sea. Until then, the current and the tearing winds had swept me along from the island Aegygia, and my fate has landed me here. Here, too, I must have evil to suffer. I do not think it will stop. Before then, the gods have much to give me. Then have pity, O queen. You are the first I have come to after much suffering. There is no one else that I know of here among the people who hold this land and this city. Show me the way to the town, and give me some rag to wrap me in, if you have any kind of piece of cloth when you came here. Of course, there's laundry lying all over the ground. They're folding up, getting ready to put back. Line 180. And then may the gods give you everything that your heart longs for. May they grant you a husband and a house and sweet agreement in all things. For nothing is better than this, more steadfast than when two people, a man and his wife, keep a harmonious household, a thing that brings much distress to the people who hate them and pleasure to their well-wishers, and for them the best reputation. That was line 185. And so, of course, he wishes her all the things that he is going to assume a girl of her age would wish for. Then, in turn, Nausicaa of the White Arms answered him, my friend, since you seem not like a thoughtless man, nor a mean one, a common one, it is Zeus himself, the Olympian, who gives people good fortune, to each single man, to the good and the bad, just as he wishes, and since he must have given you yours, you must even endure it. But now, since it is our land and our city that you have come to, you shall not lack for clothing nor anything else of those gifts which should befall the unhappy suppliant upon his arrival. So yes, they do practice proper Xenia here. And I will show you our town and tell you the name of our people. Line 195. It is the Phaeacians who hold this territory and city, and I myself am the daughter of great-hearted Alcinous, whose power and dominion are held by right, given from the Phaeacians. She spoke, and to her attendants with well-ordered hair, gave instruction. Stand fast, girls. Where are you flying just because you've looked on a man? Do you think this is some enemy coming against us? There's no such man living, nor can there ever be one who can come into the land of the Phaeacians, bringing warlike attack. We are so very dear to the immortals, and we live far apart by ourselves in the wash of the great sea, at the utter end. Line 205, nor do any other people mix with us. But since this is some poor wanderer who has come to us, we must now take care of him, since all strangers and wanderers are sacred in the sight of Zeus, because Zeus is the god of Xenia, and the gift is a light and a dear one. So my attendants give some food and drink to the stranger, and bathe him where there is shelter from the wind in the river. Remember, he's all crusty. She spoke, and they stopped their flight, stopped running away and screaming probably, line 211, encouraging each other, and led Odysseus down to the sheltered place, as Nausicaa, daughter of great-hearted Alcinous, had told them to do, and laid out for him to wear a mantle and tunic, and gave him limpid olive oil in a golden oil flask, and told him he could bathe himself in the stream of the river. Then the glorious Odysseus spoke to these serving maids. Stand as you are, girls, a little away from me, so that I can wash the salt off my shoulders and use the olive oil on them. Line 220. It is long since my skin has known any ointment, but I will not bathe in front of you, for I feel embarrassed in the presence of lovely-haired girls to appear all naked. He spoke, and they went away and told it to their young mistress. So he's not going to take the advantage and make them work or serve him. He really is taking the role of the suppliant. But when great Odysseus had bathed in the river and washed from his body the salt brine, line 225, which clung to his back and his broad shoulders, he scraped from his head the scurf of brine from the barren salt sea. But when he had bathed all and anointed himself with olive oil and put on the clothing this unwedded girl had given him, then Athena, daughter of Zeus, made him seem taller for the eye to behold, and thicker, and on his head she arranged the curling locks that hung down like hyacinth petals. And as when a master craftsman overlays gold on silver, and he is one who was taught by Hephaestus and Pallas Athena in art complete, and grace is on every work he finishes, so Athena, line 235, gilded with grace his head and his shoulders, and he went a little aside and sat by himself on the seashore, radiant in grace and good looks, and the girl admired him. So Athena has beautified him. It was to her attendants with well-ordered hair that she now spoke. Hear me, my white-armed serving women, let me say something. Line 240. It is not against the will of all the gods on Olympus that this man is here to be made known to the god Phaeacians. To the godlike Phaeacians. A while ago he seemed an uncompromising man to me. Now he even resembles one of the gods who hold high heaven. If only the man to be called my husband could be like this one, a man living here. If only this one were pleased to stay here. But come, my attendants, give some food and drink to the stranger. So she spoke, and they listened well to her and obeyed her, and they set food and drink down beside Odysseus. He then, noble and long-suffering Odysseus, eagerly ate and drank, line 250, since he had not tasted food for a long time. Then Nausicaa of the white arms thought what to do next. She folded the laundry and put it away in the fine mule wagon, and yoked the mules with powerful hooves, and herself mounted and urged Odysseus and spoke a word and named him by title. Rise up now, stranger, to go to the city, so I can see you to the house of my own prudent father, where I am confident you will be made known to all the highest Phaeacians. Or rather, do it this way. You seem to me not to be thoughtless, while we're still among the fields and the lands that the people work, line 260. For that time, follow the mules and the wagon, walking lightly along with the maids, and I'll point the way to you. But when we come to the city, and around this is a towering wall and a handsome harbor either side of the city, and a narrow causeway, and along the road there are oar-swept ships drawn up, for they all have slips, one for each vessel, and there's a place of assembly put together with quarried stone and built around a fine precinct of Poseidon, and there they tend to all that gear that goes with the black ships, the hawsers and the sails, and there they fine down their oar blades, for the Phaeacians have no concern with the bow or the quiver, but it's all masts and the oars of ships and the balanced vessels themselves, in which they delight in crossing over the gray sea. And it is their graceless speech I shrink from, for fear one may mock us hereafter, since there are insolent men in our community, and see how one of the worst sort might say when he's met us, Who is this large and handsome stranger whom Nausicaa has with her, and where did she find him? Surely he is to be her husband, but is he astray from some ship of alien men she found for herself, since there are no such hereabouts? Line 280. Or did some god, after much entreaty, come down in answer to her prayers, out of the sky, and all his days will he have her? Better so, if she goes out herself and finds her a husband from elsewhere, since she pays no heed to her own Phaeacian neighbors, although many of these and the best ones court her. So here, Homer lets us know that many of the local men have courted her, and she's turned them all down, and now she's looked on the beautified Odysseus and thinks that he is pretty cute, but she does not want the neighbors gossiping. Line 285. So they will speak, and that would be a scandal against me, and I myself would disapprove of a girl who acted so, that is, without the good will of her dear father and mother, making friends with a man before being formally married. I would never do that. Go make friends with a man before my parents introduced me to him. Of course not. Then, stranger, understand what I say, in order soon to win escort and a voyage home from my father. You will find a glorious grove of poplars, sacred to Athena, near the road, and a spring runs there, and there's a meadow about it, and there's my father's estate, and his flowering orchard, as far from the city as the shout of a man will carry. Line 295. Sit down there, and wait for time enough for the rest of us to reach the town and make our way to my father's palace. So when they get within a voice's shout, she'd like him to wait behind and come in alone so they're not seen together. But when you estimate that we shall have reached the palace, then go to the city of the Phaeacians and inquire for the palace of my father, great-hearted Alcinous. This is easily distinguished. Line 300. So an innocent child could guide you there, for there are no other houses built for the other Phaeacians anything like the house of the hero Alcinous. But when you've disappeared inside the house in the courtyard, then go on quickly across the hall until you come to my mother, and she will be sitting beside the hearth in the firelight, turning sea-purple yarn on a distaff, a wonder to look at, and leaning against the pillar, and her maids are sitting behind her, and there is my father's chair of state drawn close beside her, on which he sits when he drinks his wine like any immortal. Line 310. Go on past him, and then with your arms embrace our mother's knees. Okay, so go past my dad, go straight to my mother. Do this so as to behold your day of homecoming with happiness and speed, even if you live very far off. So now we know who wears the pants in the family. For if she has thoughts in her mind that are friendly to you, then there's hope that you can see your own people and come back to your strong-founded house, line 315, and to the land of your fathers. So Nausicaa spoke, and with the shining lash whipped up her mules, and swiftly they left the running river behind them, and the mules, neatly twinkling their feet, ran very strongly, but she drove them with care, so that those on foot, Odysseus and the serving maids, could keep up, and used the whip with discretion. And the sun went down, and they came to the famous grove, sacred to Athena, and there the great Odysseus sat down, and immediately thereafter prayed to the daughter of great Zeus. It wasn't that providential. Hear me, Atriton, child of Zeus of the Aegis, line 325, and listen to me now, since before you did not listen to my stricken voice, as the famous shaker of the earth battered me. Grant that I come, as one loved and pitied among the Phaeacians. So he spoke in prayer, and Pallas Athena heard him, but she did not yet show herself before him, for she respected her father's brother Poseidon, or her uncle, who still nursed a sore anger at godlike Odysseus, until his arrival in his own country. And there ends Book 6, with Odysseus sitting conveniently in the sacred grove of Athena, waiting to come into the city of the Phaeacians and supplicate the Queen Mother.